I am joined this morning by Jeff Strand from the Tennessee Disability Coalition. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Marsh. Thanks for having me back.
Always, Jeff, thank you for joining us. And most importantly, thank you for keeping us informed as to the legislation that directly impacts our community. As we all know, advocacy just doesn't stop with telling your story. It actually translates into taking action as well. And you are one of you and the Tennessee Disability Coalition are one of the organizations in the state of Tennessee that are helping allies for the disability community, helping in creating a better life. So I look forward to hearing more from you as to the legislation that directly impacts our community. And please carry it forward, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are right in the thick of the session right now. It started off in January. It's the second year of a 2-year session. So every General Assembly session is 2 years. The second year always goes very fast. It's a really intense year because you have all the bills that did not find some sort of resolution last year, either fail or pass. They all come back for this year. And our good friends at the legislature proposed like 2,000 more. So there are a lot of bills here in the second year, but as far as the disability community is concerned and the coalition is concerned, we've really focused down on a few of them here. So we've got our policy platform here at TDC that we've been working on, and then of course we play a lot of defense down at the Capitol, making sure that things that would harm the disability community intentionally or unintentionally don't find a way into law. So I'll start with our policy platform, if that's all right, and I'll start with our successes.
Absolutely.
We got a call from somebody who was renewing their disability parking placard sometime in January, and noticed that they used some really outdated language, like permanently confined, or no, what is it? Yeah, confined to a wheelchair. They describe people as spastics and arthritics and mentally defectives. And that's just old, outdated language. We know that language is important for the perception of the disability community. We want to be known primarily by who we are rather than what our disability is, or a lot of us do anyway. And so what this bill did was a simple cleanup of the code. And it took some of that outdated language and modernized it. So instead of permanently confined to a wheelchair, it says permanently in use of a wheelchair. So the same thing, but in modern language. And frankly, less offensive language. And we think that just furthers our cause of writing the kind of perception that we want to be written at Cordell Hull. So that one passed really easily, no problems. That one's already done and in the books. As far as our the rest of the stuff, a big one that we've already passed so far on the Senate side is our paid family caregiving resolution. Just quick civics 101 here. A resolution is a non-binding sort of sentiment from the General Assembly. So a law tells somebody they have to do things like do something. A resolution says, hey, we think you should do something. And this one was, hey, we, the General Assembly, or the Senate in this case, think that the state should develop a comprehensive statewide paid family caregiving program. Current policy is sort of squishy on what that looks like, but it makes it really, really difficult to be paid as a family caregiver if you live in the same residence as the person you're providing care. So that's aging spouses, parents of kids with disabilities are pretty much excluded from this. And 10 Care in the state do all they can to dissuade folks from making that choice that they want to be paid for the care that they're providing. And so we worked through Senator Yeager's office to get that through, and it passed on the Senate side. On the House side, it just started going yesterday, actually. So Tuesday the 19th, it passed its first committee in the House. And so in the end, what we're really hoping will happen is we can go to 10 Care and say, hey, look, both the House and the Senate think you should do this. Here's your opportunity to do it on your own. If not, TDC and the disability community will come back with a bill next year. So this is going to be a multi-year effort. This is step one. It's not very possible. It's possible, TennCare does this on their own this summer, but it's more likely that we're going to have to make a legislative push next year. And so advocates out there, that's going to need a lot of support. And we're really excited to get folks in the game.
Jeff, can I ask a question as to the sentiment behind this this particular resolution? Is it for caregivers to be paid a monthly stipend while they're at home caring for their child or the individual with disability? Because going out and finding a job is almost in some ways impossible to do if that person does not have a caregiver at home. So basically the family member is being, receives a stipend for this obligation. Is that?
Well, that's the beauty of starting with a resolution is we have an end goal here, and that's a paid family caregiving program. The policy details, how it would work, is up to us to work on and up to the community to tell us what they want. So it could look like a monthly stipend. It could look like a wage. They could pay an hourly wage. It could be limited to just some caregivers of people with disabilities. It could be everybody. We could put income. So the amount of levers and the types of levers are almost infinite with this. And so what we really want to hear this summer from the disability community is what you want this program to look like, so that when we come around in January and say, hey, you know, the General Assembly said last year, we think you should do this, and then you didn't do it. Here's what we want you to do specifically. And so we really do want to hear from the disability community because we want to build something that works, and we want it to be comprehensive. We want to make it easy for caregivers. And the best way to do that is to hear about what it's like to be a caregiver and what those caregivers want.
Okay.
So now on to the ones we're still fighting about. And this year we have received a lot of the fight. So our first one that I want to talk about is Senate Bill 2791. This is our TennCare for Working Adults with Disabilities Act. It is essentially a Medicaid buy-in program, which is what it sounds like. It's for folks to pay 5% of their annual income to access Medicaid benefits, regardless of their income or assets. So currently, if you need Medicaid services, and a lot of folks with disabilities do, you can't make more than, as an individual, about $19,000 a year, and you can't have more than $2,000 in assets. And that is pretty strict. Yeah, and it's limiting to the aspirations of folks, aspirations of families. We talk to a lot of folks who get divorced because of this, because they don't want their spouse to be subjected to these same restrictions. And so what this would do is it kind of lifts that artificial cap on what you can do and what you can aspire to. So we've been working with a really great advocate. His name is Robbie. 2 years ago, he was in a car accident that left him paralyzed from the shoulders down. Spent the last 2 years recovering, doing physical therapy, you know, getting back to a point where he can be at home. And now he wants to go back to work. But he is a corporate finance guy, and he can do that from his chair. But there's no such thing as a corporate finance job that pays $19,000 a year. And he absolutely needs his Medicaid services because he needs at-home care. And private insurance would never cover that. And so this would give him an opportunity to pay into the system, access those benefits, go to work, build a family, save. And we're really excited about this one. We would be the 47th state to have one. 46 other states have already figured this out. So we're really excited about that one. The biggest obstacle for us is not the, you know, the substance of the bill. People, they get it. And they want, you know, legislators want folks to be able to go to work. They want folks to have a family. And they know that this is a barrier. The real obstacle for us will be the cost. And so TennCare, in our opinion, inaccurately projected that this would cost $18 million. And we think it would cost more like $1.8 million. So our next steps here are to finish getting through the committees and get to the finance committees, where they're gonna talk money, and work with our sponsors to revise our fiscal note, which is the estimate of what it costs. And so we'll work with them, we'll work with the speaker, we'll work with the Office of Fiscal Review and give them our numbers and say, this is why we think you're wrong. But again, here's where grassroots and advocates can come into play here is, that they can push our legislators to, you know, realize what the actual cost of this would be. It's more like our estimate than 10 CARES estimate.
So, Jeff, I'm just going to kind of ask a question on this as well. As a person with a disability, you want to get out there into the workforce. You want to earn that living, but your period of actually employment is not always set in stone. For example, you may get sick, or, you know, something may come around. So you may not always necessarily be able to hold on from that company or employer sponsored healthcare. So that is one of the, you know, just that's just a consideration to getting your Medicare, getting your healthcare from a state sponsored organization makes much better sense. And it's not something that you guys are asking just to be bestowed on. It's something where you buy in. So there's that fiscal responsibility and accountability as well. And I mean, that just opens up the door for, I mean, future employment opportunities from what I can see. And obviously there's many more perspectives out there. So how can folks reach you guys as far as what opinions and options might be, Jeff, if they would like to, contribute a perspective or add to the story, so to speak?
Well, I think one of a big champion for us would be the Speaker Cameron Sexton in the House. He worked with our original sponsor, Darren Jernigan, to figure out how to pay for this. And so Tennessee has something in their Medicaid waiver called shared savings. And how that works is that the federal government and the state combine together to put a big pot of money every year for Medicaid services. And through our shared savings program, any of those dollars that we don't spend, Tennessee and 10 Care now get to keep a portion of, just as long as they use it to either reach a new population with their Medicaid program or provide a new service. And so our Medicaid buy-in program qualifies in both those respects. So this was Cameron Sexton's idea that we try to tap into these funds. Darren Jernigan agreed. He eventually signed the bill off to Tim Hicks on that side because he thought Tim Hicks might have a better avenue towards getting it passed. But so reaching out to Cameron Sexton and really, this is a little crude, fluffing him up. Let him know that he's doing the right thing here. And the disability community really wants this program. And the disability community really knows what it's going to cost. And so urging him to work with the Disability Coalition, work with the sponsors, really champion this Medicaid buy-in program would be a huge feather in our hat that I really think could help us fix the fiscal note and get this across the finish line.
Thanks, Jeff.
And so the last one on our kind of our policy platform this year that, you know, we proposed as the Disability Coalition is our Right to Repair Part 2. It's a wheelchair repair bill. So last year, we passed Right to Repair Part 1 that prohibited prior authorization for the repair of wheelchairs. So before we passed that, insurance companies would require somebody who uses a wheelchair or the caregiver, somebody who uses a wheelchair, to go to their doctor. We had to write a letter of medical necessity saying, yes, this person still needs a wheelchair. Well, folks who are in a wheelchair in some sort of frequent basis are probably going to need a wheelchair in the long term. So that seemed like a really unnecessary step that just added to this long wait period to get repairs for a wheelchair. We had heard from an advocate that they had waited 6 weeks on a flat tire. They had to go to their doctor who said, yep, you still need a wheelchair. And they had to call their wheelchair manufacturer and say, hey, I have a flat. Then they sent out an authorized technician who said, yep, you have a flat. So then they went back and they ordered the part. They waited for the part to arrive. And then they got out there and fixed it. And that took them 6 weeks. And 6 weeks without a wheelchair for someone who needs it is forever. I mean, it is your lifeline. It is your access to the world. And to have that taken away over something like a flat tire was really problematic for us. So the way that this bill, part two, works this year is we established two new ways to get your wheelchair fixed. So you can still do the old way. You can go through your warranty, call your manufacturer, and they'll send out an authorized technician. That's for things that are complicated, you know, require some software work, or things where you want to make sure that it's a really safe repair done by somebody who knows what they're doing. The other two, the first one is independent repairs. So there's a number of kind of simple non-clinical fixes that we've laid out in the bill that you can have someone who is an independent repair person do. For example, a flat tire. You could go to your local bike shop and they can install your tire for you. You can reach out to your manufacturer and order the part and they'll send it to your bike shop. So that's, we think that that's really helpful, not just for those quick fixes, but also it frees up those authorized technicians to go work on more difficult cases. And then the third way is through preventative maintenance. And so this one has been a real sticking point for private insurance companies, for 10Care, for those who are going to have to pay for it. But preventative maintenance is what it sounds like. Once a year, you can call up your wheelchair supplier, so the person, the store, whoever sold you the wheelchair, and say, hey, can you come out and do a checkup? And they'll come out and do the checkup. They'll tighten some bolts. They'll fix things that they can fix with their toolbox right there, and hopefully extend the life of the wheelchair further to prevent any need for future repairs. So now there are three different ways that a person can get their wheelchair fixed: the old way with the warranty and the authorized tech, independent repairs, and preventative maintenance. And we think that all three of those things combined will really streamline this process. It'll put some pressure on folks to keep parts in stock, and it'll just move things along faster. So people who use a wheelchair who might be in need of repair can get back to their life. And so we're really excited about this one.
Jeff, is there any other, we've got about 20, we've got about 5 more minutes. Is there, I mean, I know that the school voucher program is probably not within the scope of this podcast. And honestly, maybe we shouldn't, shouldn't record it. It's just, I mean, people are upset. I mean, even in our area, I mean, it's, so yeah, I think we need to, as you said, you know, just leave that alone for right now. And I'll obviously edit what we're saying right now out. But is there any other legislation that you think that it's really important for folks to kind of start like mobilizing for?
Yes. And this is why I saved this one for the last one.
Okay.
This is probably the biggest fight that the Disability Coalition has seen in a decade or so in playing defense. So this one is House Bill 2497. And this would allow two companies in the state to be exempt from our state's anti-institutionalization laws. So when we closed the institutions over the previous two decades, we put in place these laws to prevent them being built again. And so the law is kind of crude, but very effective. It says no more than 4 people with disabilities can live in one residence without anybody who doesn't have a disability. And that residence can't be within 500 yards of another residence for people with disabilities. So it just says 4 in one spot and you can't line them up all next to each other. And so that has been effective in protecting our population against, you know, backsliding and institutionalization. Well, these two organizations would like an exemption to that. They would like to build dormitory style housing for people with disabilities in their respective campuses. And I'll leave out their names because they're not trying to do anything wrong here. They have no ill intent, I'm sure of it. They are trying to address a real problem, and that's the lack of residential options for people with disabilities, specifically folks with intellectual developmental disabilities. We just think they're going about it the wrong way. We don't think that, you know, two dormitories on either side of the state is worth eroding and jeopardizing this longstanding protection against institutionalization. And so that one was heard in House Health Sub yesterday, the subcommittee, and Senate Health and Welfare. Senate Health and Welfare had passed. We did not offer testimony on that side out of deference to the sponsor, who's leader Jack Johnson, because we told him we'd work with him and we'd work on a compromise solution. On the health side, we supported our good friends at the ARC of Tennessee and the Council on Developmental Disabilities to provide testimony that outlined our concerns. And we have lots of concerns. We know that congregate segregated facilities, whether state institution or privately run such as these, are not the best option for people with disabilities. People with, and You know, I take that back. For some folks, this is the type of option that they want, but it erodes that protection for the rest of us. So we don't think that is worth it. We think that these organizations can build more residential options for people within the bounds of this law. And they would just, they're not interested in that. And so our biggest concerns are not with their proposal. It's not with, you know, the specter of institutionalization. We don't think they're building a state institution. We think they're trying to do the right thing here. But our big concern is with segregation, congregate settings, and the erosion of this anti-institutionalization firewall. And we are up for a big fight here. They are adamant, as they should be, in their advocacy. They have good sponsors. And frankly, it's been a while since our legislators have heard this fight. And they forget what it's like. It's been a decade since we've had this fight. And there are a lot of new faces in there that don't remember. They don't remember this fight. And so advocates out there, you know, whatever side you're on, I mean, we're all on the side of more residential options here. I'd hope you'd recognize that our state's protections and firewall are too important to, you know, jeopardize by just such a narrow solution. And we'd like to work with the sponsors, the organizations, the companies to find a compromise solution where it's not segregated, it's not congregate, and leaves alone that protection. But we're going to need a push. We're going to need them to see that we are acting in good faith too, and that we want the same thing, but different means of getting there.
You know, Jeff, just as the mom, I 100% understand that they can at never at any time be a slide towards institutionalization, right? But I think, you know, I think that's why this conversation needs to even happen within the community itself, because the underlying issue is that there is a very limited housing stock. I mean, with the universal design that enables a person with a disability to live independently with or without community supports. So it's a limited housing stock. So, and I'll be honest, because this is actually one of the conversations that I've had with other parents is why can't they be, for example, parents pooling together assets to set up a house for their, especially if there's no family members that are available or willing to, to take on the responsibility. And so I don't know, Jeff, definitely there never needs to be a slide towards institutionalization, but I think there's a real concern of where to after a young adult turns 21, and if they do want to move out on their own, what is there out in the community that they can move to in terms of housing options? Yeah.
And that's really what we want. That is a conversation that needs to be had, and it needs to be had on a level playing field and in good faith. Yeah. And we don't want to make a hasty choice here.
Yes.
This is a hasty choice. So I'm with you. I would never begrudge anybody doing the best thing for their child, disability or not. But we are just concerned that by making that choice, you reduce the choice of others. But we need to have this conversation, and we need to know what the rest of the disability community thinks. And we need to go forward in the right direction with us all on the same page. And we're worried that this bill is too quick, it's too narrow, and leaves us in the exact same spot that we are now with just fewer protections. So that's where we stand on this. It's a tough one. It's a big fight. But I do want to know what people think. So that's what I would ask of the grassroots, the advocates out there, is think about this and think hard about it. And, you know, imagine what you want, right? How can we fix the residential problem? What should we protect? How should we move forward?
Jeff, as always, you just give us so much of food for thought, and you actually give direction as far as how we need to, utilize that energy and kind of mobilize it towards efforts that are going to be meaningful for, just progress within the community at large. And, you know, any conversations or opportunities for engagements that you guys think of setting up in the future that addresses, I mean, I know myself as a parent, we want to have these conversations, and we want to try and move towards some kind of solution as well. So thank you for your time, Jeff. You have an ally here at the podcast. So anytime at all that you want to come on and, you know, kind of let us know about what's happening and what we need to look out for. We really appreciate the efforts of the Tennessee Disability
Well, thanks,
Coalition.
Marsh. And this is a great opportunity to reach out to our community, because that's why we do what we do. We want to act on the best interest of the community, and we only know what to do if the community tells us. So I'd love to come back after the session and recap what happened, or the resolution to all these things I talked about. And we do have some opportunities this summer to hear out the community, from special ed to paid family caregiving to Katie Beckett to housing solutions. And so I'd love to come after the session and talk about opportunities to engage that way.
Thank you, Jeff. You have an amazing day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marsh.
Let me push this stop over here.
Yeah.